Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today, ISF CEO Steve Durbin is in conversation with Brett Baranek, Vice President and General Manager of Security and Biometrics at Nuance Communications. Steve and Brett discuss some of the potential and some of the challenges of biometrics in the security space, including recent advancements in deep neural networks and deepfakes.
So Brett, thanks very much for joining me on the podcast today.
It's a pleasure, Steve.
I understand that you've got pretty detailed experience. I'm putting you on the spot here. Pretty detailed experience in biometrics. You've been studying that space for quite some while, you know, developed facial recognition systems, fingerprint biometrics, video analytics, all that kind of thing. For our listeners, just tell them a little bit about your background and how you came to work in what is an absolutely fascinating space.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for giving me the opportunity to give a little bit of context. So I've always been passionate about law enforcement and fighting fraud. You know, when I was a teenager, I was kept on telling my friends that I wanted to join the RCMP for the non-Canadians. That's the federal police here. And I actually decided to take a slightly different track, focus on technology, and started my career in the security space. And as you mentioned, I had hands-on experience with fingerprint recognition, facial recognition, analytics within the video surveillance space to really touch on both IT security, physical security. And I had an opportunity to join Nuance 10 years ago to lead the voice biometrics business. I was really fascinated by the technology itself. So unlike the other biometric technologies that were very static in nature, you know, measuring very specific characteristics of a person's face or characteristics of their fingerprint, the voice seemed like a very fascinating technology because our voices are so variable, right? We all know that through our personal experience. We wake up in the morning, our voice sounds a little bit different than it does in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And we can even modify our voice on purpose, right? So we can speak in a high-pitched voice or so forth. And so I had that interest. And so I decided to take on the challenge and really discovered that this is a technology that can be quite game-changing for both authentication and fraud prevention. And so full transparency, Steve, when I started this journey, I did not know the full reach and the full potential of the technology, and fast track 10 years later. And here we are securing, some of the world's most high risk transactions in the banking world, but also securing just day-to-day account access for the average consumer. And so I'm quite proud of how we've been able to transform that customer experience and at the same time, prevent a lot of fraudsters from stealing people's identity and finances.
Sure. I mean, my experience with biometrics, I have to say, has been confined to fingerprints, facial. I mean, I started looking at fingerprint biometrics, gosh, going back now, maybe 20 years, maybe a bit more than that. But of course, that was in the whole sort of area of criminality and so on, law enforcement. And so, and here we are talking about voice print technology effectively. So for people listening to this, what is the difference? What is it about the technology that has changed so much that's enabling us now, as you rightly point out, to be able to have moved from, say, static fingerprint biometric, which doesn't change as a rule, through to something that can be morphed, changed, and yet now you're saying, I think we've got a degree of confidence that the technology is up to the task.
You got it. And so it's all a question of being able to analyze a large amount of data in a very short period of time. And Steve, I'm glad that you brought up law enforcement because this technology really had its origins in forensic science. And you can imagine law enforcement tapping into phone conversations between criminals and recording, several minutes of calls. And you have a lot of voice sample in a long phone conversation. And so there was sufficient amount of data in those phone calls in order to identify an individual. And so what has transpired on the technology side has been the introduction of deep neural networks, which has allowed us to leverage technology to find minute voice characteristics and to understand the relationship between those voice characteristics, which, quite frankly, if you had a bunch of PhDs trying to figure that out manually, it just wouldn't be possible. And so that's really been the technological revolution that's allowed us today to be able to identify a person by their voice with as little as half a second of speech, which is truly, you know, for those of us who have been following, you know, the biometric space, it's just a phenomenal leap forward, because we've gone from minutes of audio to half a second. And the other innovation is that for these short utterances, typically, if you went back 10 years ago, you would need to have the individual speak something very specific. So there are still a number of organizations out there using passphrases in order to authenticate an individual.
Yeah.
So, you know, my voice is my password, or, you know, some variation of that theme. And so that's the second innovation, is, you know, short amount of audio, but also unconstrained speech.
Right. Okay.
Now, you know, Steve, I'm going to anticipate one of your follow-up questions, which is, well, you know, the bad guys haven't been sitting on their hands and watching us improve the technology and just be passive in this equation. They've been thinking about, well, how do we attack this technology? And so, you know, the biggest threat that we've seen is spoofing attacks,
right?
Which is not a new concept, right? There's been spoofing attacks against fingerprints and facial recognition. But on the voice side of the equation, the way that you would perform a spoofing attack is to either record somebody's voice, which very early in the technological evolution, we've been able to detect recordings. But the more challenging one has been synthetic voices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the media has used the term deep fakes in recent years. You know, that's one of the attack vectors that we anticipate fraudsters could use in the future in order to spoof a voice biometric system.
Right.
And we've used the same deep neural network technology in order to detect these minute differences between a natural voice and a synthetic voice. And it turns out that voices generated by computers have a certain pattern to them that can be detected by these deep neural networks. And so we're always striving to stay one step ahead of the fraudsters. And so we have these mitigation algorithms against recordings, also against synthetic voices. And we're always on the lookout for the next potential attack vector that a fraudster could use.
So all of this technology we're talking about here, Brett, sounds really advanced and really expensive. Is it the kind of thing that we're going to see being widely rolled out, or is it, for the time being anyway, still within the remit of law enforcement, government agencies, perhaps the very large, you know, banking institutions, that kind of thing? Who's able to afford to use this kind of thing today is my question.
So Steve, you're absolutely correct that from a algorithmic perspective, there is a level of complexity that really is, you know, uncomparable in the biometric space, right? There's just this huge gap between, you know, static biometrics and variable biometrics as voices. However, we've been able to productize the software around these complex algorithms to a point where even relatively small organizations can use this technology for both authenticating customers and for detecting fraudsters. So much so that we have very small credit unions and community banks that are using our biometric tech within their contact centers and within their mobile apps. And so you're absolutely correct that, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, 5-6 years ago, it was primarily very large organizations, big banks, big telecommunication firms, and government agencies that were using this technology. But there is a certain democratization of the tech that has taken place. And especially what we've noticed is the pandemic has driven a lot of these smaller organizations to implement this technology for a very simple reason. Fraudsters have just been able to attack organizations and take over people's identities much more easily during the pandemic, because they were able to socially engineer account holders, consumers, much more easily with phishing and vishing scams. So getting somebody's username and password for their banking account or other details that could be used to take over their identity just became significantly easier.
Right. Yeah. One of the other things that grew during the pandemic, it seems. So let's talk a little bit about privacy, because one of the things that people always talk to me about in that sort of traditional biometric space is privacy. You know, you're taking some very, very personal data here. You know, you've got fingerprint scans, you've got, you know, facial stuff. You know, people can't change that. And so if it's hacked, if it's exfiltrated and potentially reused, people tend to get a bit concerned about that. Are similar concerns around the technology we're talking about here around the voice prints, or have you managed to sort of sidestep that? Is that something that people don't need to worry about, basically?
So, you know, I personally am a firm believer in privacy rights. And, you know, within Nuance, I've driven the concept that we should be proactive stewards of privacy. And often the recommendations that we provide to our customers go above and beyond the legal frameworks in place within the countries that we deploy. So that's a little bit my opening statement, that I do take this very seriously on a personal level. There are a couple of nuances between voice biometrics and other biometric modalities, from the very simple reason that we tend to share our voices quite openly.
Right.
And so it's quite different than a fingerprint. If somebody random knocked on your door and said, "Can I have a sample of your fingerprint?" you would probably ask a lot of questions and probably say no if there wasn't a very compelling reason for you to do so. On the other hand, just the situation I just described, you would probably speak to the person without any hesitation, right? And so we as humans have internalized that our voices are something that is in the public domain. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't implement security measures to minimize access, right, to our voices, to third parties to which we don't want to provide this access or source biometric, which is our voice in this case. And so we do take these privacy concerns seriously, and we make sure that a person's voice is not shared with somebody or is not used for a purpose that is not known to the individual. And so we've been firm proponents of making the use of biometrics known. So we don't believe that it should be used in a hidden fashion. And we also are big proponents of ensuring that individuals provide their consent for the biometric to be used. And also that the data is not stored for purposes that are beyond the original purpose. So if the data needs to be stored for the creation of the voice print, and then you are no longer a customer, right, with that organization, then that data should be deleted. So those are some fundamental privacy principles that we believe in and that we've been proposing that our customers follow. And in the great majority of cases, our customers have internalized those as well. Now, you know, the big question that a lot of your listeners will have is, well, you know, what happens if a malicious individual, right, does get access to the voice?
Right.
And that comes back to the topic we were speaking about earlier, right, which is, you know, we've always assumed that that scenario will happen. We've never assumed that a malicious individual will not have access to your voice. And so we've always had these mitigating strategies, whether for recordings or for synthetic voices, to make sure that people's identities were not at risk, right, by using voice biometrics.
Right. Sounds suspiciously like security by design and privacy by design, which is the sort of thing that, you know, people have been talking about for quite some while, but very few have actually managed to implement. I remember having a conversation, gosh, probably a few years back now, with Anne Kavoukian, who you may know as the Privacy Commissioner, was Privacy Commissioner. And we had that just that very same conversation about, you know, if only we could build in some of these safeguards right at the beginning, then life would become so much easier. And it sounds from the way you're describing as if that's the approach that you recommend people take with this.
Yeah, and it's been our stance, and unfortunately, and I'm not going to name any organizations in particular, but unfortunately, it hasn't been the norm within the biometrics industry.
Right.
And so you have device manufacturers that have released, you know, biometrics on devices with no thought given to the concept of spoofing, which, mm-hmm. you know, anybody who would spend 15 minutes thinking about security, right, would say, okay, well, we need to give that some thought and have some mitigating strategies. And so privacy by design and security by design have not been commonplace and have created some anxiety and some pushback to biometrics, which I fully understand. Because if, as a consumer, if those are the only exemplars that I've been exposed to, then I can create a negative perception of the biometrics industry. So, you know, I've been very vocal. I've, you know, published a lot And whenever I have the opportunity to speak on the topic of privacy, I bring this up because I do believe that not only is it important for all of us as citizens, but I think it's also important for us as an industry to internalize privacy by design so that, you know, we don't inadvertently, you know, create a situation where biometrics is not used to its full extent.
Right.
And inadvertently create an opportunity for malicious individuals to take advantage of, you know, legacy authentication methods such as knowledge-based authentication or even token-based authentication and perpetrate fraud when it can be absolutely prevented.
Right. Absolutely. Let's look forward a little bit now, Brett. You know, what we've been talking about here for some people may be a little bit advanced. Let's try and roll it forward even further. What does the future look like? So, you know, we've been talking about voice print-based technology, biometrics. Where do we go from here? What's the future?
Yeah. So I think that the use of biometrics for both authentication and for fraud detection will become commonplace and it will just become the norm. I think that the days of, you know, using passwords or even SMS, you know, one-time passwords, right, that are sent to our phone are coming to an end. And the fraud data is quite revealing, right? The fact that fraud is increasing by double digits every year is an indication that, you know, these methods are simply not working, right? And the industry has to change. And by the industry, I mean all organizations, right? So, you know, banks, telecommunication firms, insurance companies, governments. And so my prediction is that over the next couple of years, we're going to see a rapid adoption of not only voice biometrics, but other technologies as well for the purposes of authentication and fraud prevention. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, with the pandemic, we've had an acceleration of the use of remote channels to interact with organizations. And so, whereas, you know, pre-pandemic, there were still cases where you would have to go into a physical location to prove your identity and to perform a transaction. You know, I think those days are over. Mm-hmm. And so that backstop that some organizations have always had, right, of, okay, now you're going to do something very high risk. We need you to actually show up somewhere physically and show ID. I think that is no longer going to be acceptable. And so I think those use of remote channels and the need to migrate to biometrics is actually going to make it quite interesting. And just to bring it down to earth for a lot of your listeners, I can just imagine us opening up our mobile apps, for example, your banking app, and being able to, you know, change your address, report fraud, send money to a third party. A lot of these transactions currently are limited in scope because of the lack of security, because of the lack of trust, right, that an organization has in these channels to perform high-risk transactions.
So plenty of opportunity, plenty of applications, and provided we get the security and the privacy issues right from the outset, unlimited opportunity is what I'm hearing you say.
Absolutely. This is a technology that has a wonderful combination of being able to make lives easier for consumers, and at the same time, prevent malicious individuals from perpetrating fraud. And I've been in the industry, security industry, for over 20 years now, and I haven't been able to say that quite often, because often security technology is there, creating barriers, making things more difficult, adding steps to a process. And here we're actually making things completely transparent. As you and I are speaking, right, we can use technology to validate who we are and not actually request the individual to take an overt step in order to identify themselves.
Fantastic. Brett, thank you so much for sharing some of those insights and really, I think, hopefully opening people's eyes to some of the uses that biometrics can be put to in the future. So thank you very much indeed.
It was a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks to this week's guest, Brett Baranek. Next week, Steve speaks with Adam Rumenek, founder and CEO of Auxmode, a company specializing in digital rights management, content strategy, and IP protection. Here's a preview.
A lot of these corporations are now, especially since a couple of years ago when Sony got hacked with that movie, The Interview, and, you know, unfortunately, COVID expedited this whole process. They've taken streaming platforms quite seriously. I mean, Disney didn't have one 2 years ago. Now they have over 100 million monthly subscribers. The writing's on the wall that it's not going anywhere.
Right.
The problem's here. There's more platforms than ever, and people gravitated towards streaming, especially since movie theaters got closed. And I'm a bit older and Seinfeld's now on Netflix and I'm rewatching Seinfeld in 2021 and it's a hit. So these platforms and corporations are now managing this type of risk in part of their business model.
We'll be back for the full conversation in a week. In the meantime, is there a topic or question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode? Let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find that catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Follow us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. Follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you like the ISF podcast, we'd love it if you'd write a short review and if you'd rate the podcast. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, associate producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.